I'm Gregory Burke. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTDHD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. It's a day off, of course, in Kenosha Unified, Racine Unified, for the public schools of Burlington and for many, many points here in southeastern Wisconsin, but not much of a day off here at Gateway Technical College. We appreciate the fact that Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway, has made his way to campus through this frigidly cold weather. And as a matter of fact, three guests are joining us as well in the studio today as we talk about excellence in teaching. So we have an exciting hour ahead of us, and we begin by welcoming Brian Albrecht back to the morning show. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Greg. Happy New Year to you and to all of our listeners. And, you know, as we begin planning for our spring semester, it hardly feels like spring outside, doesn't it?
I was going to say, it seems like a strange turn of phrase today.
I know, but it is that time of year. We're pretty excited. Our faculty are back on campus. We have a full day of in-service activities tomorrow. We'll reorientate everyone to some of the changes that have taken place since last December, which seems like such a long time ago already. Time flies so fast. And just wanted to acknowledge all the folks that are helping us out through volunteerism. It's annual time for our Gateway Days, which is we set up three days for students when they come back to help orientate new students to the campus, to talk to students about joining organizations and clubs, and really just to help our students understand all of the services that are available at Gateway. And that's a big effort. You know, we know that school's going to start. We think people just come in and walk to class, but there's a lot of logistics that take place to make that happen. And through Gateway Days, we're able to help make that transition a little bit easier for our students. I also want to just acknowledge the last week or week and a half of effort that's been going on to help provide student orientation. Our student services division have held events during the day and in the evening for new students to help them get readjusted into college life. I know there was a big event over at the Horizon Center just a few days ago, and Snap-on brought their new education truck there and was an orientation for the automotive students. And I want to just say thank you to Bill Biggie, who is always a great champion for us. He worked for Snap-on, but he does a great job of helping students understand the connection between our educational programs and the world of work, and that's a nice event. And also want to just recognize another special event that I had a chance to attend on Monday night, and that was the Society for Manufacturing Engineers annual banquet. And I was fortunate to be invited to be the guest speaker, so I was thrilled to do that. But they also gave an award to Rich Bunekamper, a Gateway faculty member, for starting the very first SME chapter in Southeast Wisconsin, which is a pretty big deal. It takes 2 years to establish a chapter, and it really focuses on the professionalism of engineering and now allows our students to access resources of SME, including scholarships and field trips to local industries, and just another great statement of the quality of services and programs that are offered here. Our manufacturing and engineering programs are now acknowledged in a national professional organization like SME. So great time to be at Gateway, and I know the weather's going to warm up, so any of our listeners that are still interested in taking classes, we're still taking registration.
If you're brave enough to make your way. I know that tonight, speaking of getting out there in the cold, and tonight I'm afraid in the snow as well, there is nevertheless an event that you're very excited about, which involves the Gateway Foundation.
Yes, thanks for bringing that up, Greg. Once a year, we have a chance to honor and recognize students through our Gateway Foundation Scholarship Night. It's always an exciting event. Students are just thrilled, of course, to receive a scholarship. Anytime you can get a little extra money to help with school, it's terrific. But we also honor and recognize our donors, which is so important to me and to everyone here at the college, because without our donors, of course, we wouldn't be able to do what we do in the foundation, nor would we have scholarships. And in today's world, that little bit of extra incentive financially and with a vote of confidence by folks from our community to say, I want to invest in you through a scholarship, it just means an awful lot to our students. And tonight we'll recognize, close to $100,000 in scholarships we'll award tonight.
Wow.
And that'll be a nice transition point for a lot of students, help them buy some books or maybe pay for an extra class or hopefully help them with a little child care if they need it. But we're honored to do that. Thank you to our foundation and thank you to all our donors.
Very good. I know that one of the increasingly important hallmarks of education here at Gateway involves this notion of service learning, which has been folded into Gateway's mission in a more and more intricate and complex way. And now there's this new opportunity that sounds especially exciting.
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. You know, we're very good at helping develop technical skills, and we're going to learn about some of that today with our excellence faculty topic. But there's so much more to our well-rounded education. And, of course, service, being involved in your community, understanding what role you play, whether you're in your occupation or you're a family member and you're just trying to provide additional support for your children or other community events. Today's a great example. It's so cold outside, and I know that the Boys and Girls Club is staying open late, and the YMCAs are staying open to help provide childcare, and someone has to volunteer to help manage all of that. But we work hard at Gateway to build service learning experiences into our programs and into all of the services offered to students. So over the holidays, as an example, we held mitten drives and coat drives and toy drives for kids. Over the holidays, we had the charity auction, which is our interior design students decorated chairs and then sold them at an auction and then donated that money back to the community. So there's a lot of different ways to address service learning. But this week, actually, we have a team of students from healthcare to physical therapy to horticulture that are all on a trip to Belize providing free services, healthcare services, gardening services, farming services to community members, and it's called Orange Walk, and they are just so thrilled. I've been following them on the blog. It's a beautiful place, and our students are making such a big impact. In fact, yesterday I was just watching the local news broadcast from Belize, if you can believe it, over the internet, of course.
Right.
And they're interviewing some of our teachers and some of our students, and it was just so prideful for me to know that, yes, we give a lot in our home communities, and we will always do that, but boy, our students are reaching out and making an impact all over the world. So it's really a great time to be involved in service learning.
Fantastic. Well, we have three guests joining us in the studios today, three very special guests, and you've just briefly touched on the notion of excellence in teaching, and that, of course, is what brings these three particular Gateway instructors to the program today. Tell us about the award which each of them has been given and what it represents.
You bet. I'm so proud to. And kind of wraps up everything that I talked about, you know, the importance of service and the importance of scholarship and of certainly all of the activities of a new semester starting. But once a year, this is how the program works. It's called the National Institute for Staff and Organizational Development, located in Austin, Texas. Once a year, they allow community colleges to nominate outstanding faculty members for a national award. And we do it through a peer nomination process. So that is, a faculty member can nominate another faculty member. So it's truly a recognition of quality by your peers, which I think is one of the highest marks of excellence. And the nominations all come back through the president's office, through my office, and then we have a team that does the evaluation on that. And each year we select a campus representative from Elkhorn, from Racine, and from Kenosha. And so today, and they just were noticed of this right before the holiday, and they haven't even received their medallion yet, but they will this spring when they attend the NISOD conference. But I wanted to just acknowledge John Doms and Heidi Jenkins and Sonia Cooks for their excellence leadership and for, most importantly, the dedication and commitment they've made to Gateway Technical College, both the students and, as you can tell, as a peer nomination to their colleagues. And it's really, I think, a great statement of the quality of services that we provide at Gateway. And I couldn't ask for three more outstanding representatives of our faculty here at Gateway.
It's great to have all three of you here, and we especially appreciate you forging your way through the worst that Mother Nature can throw at all of us this morning. It's really nice of you to be here on a day when you might not otherwise be arising quite so early. So we're really happy to have you here, and we congratulate you on being recipients of this award. One of you has been with us before, John Doms. As I recall, you teach on the Elkhorn campus?
Burlington, Greg.
Or Burlington campus.
Yes.
And just spell that out for us a little bit. What do you teach there?
Well, I'm lucky enough to be associated with the fire program, and I'm the program chair for fire. And starting, I think, my eighth year with Gateway full-time. I've been an adjunct since 1990, and have had the opportunity to work with nearly 50 fire departments in our district and helping shape the future for those organizations and to give them the support they need to be successful.
And as department chair, it holds a lot of different responsibilities along with instruction, but maybe, John, you could just share a little bit. I mean, how many adjunct instructors do you help organize and keep on the same path? Because it's quite a unique program in that You know, we work with municipalities and fire departments in their variety of different areas. Some are volunteers, some are, you know, full-time, and it's quite a challenge.
Well, Brian, we have approximately 100 adjuncts doing different parts of the program, everything from technical rescue to dispatch training to leadership training to the basic firefighting, the advanced firefighting. An extraordinary group of people. I'm very fortunate to work with such a creative and dedicated group of instructors.
It's a great program. I know that Gateway's instrumental in providing the technical service professionals in fire and police and EMS programs. And it's always inspiring for me every time I get a chance to go out to the Hero Center and meet some of the fire representatives that we have, and they're just so passionate and committed to their profession, and great to have John leading that team for us.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. And right next to you is Heidi Jenkins. Heidi, which campus do you teach on, and what do you teach?
I teach on the Racine campus the majority of the time, and I am a reading and writing instructor, so I teach in the General Studies Department.
So that means you are intersecting with just about everybody at Gateway. I mean, potentially students in, is it nearly every program that ends up accessing the kind of courses you teach?
Oh, yes, because we have, you know, a lot of our courses are requirements prereqs. Like, for example, an introduction to reading and study skills is a prereq for a lot of the psych courses. But, you know, I'm pretty much the first line of defense as they come into Gateway, because I'm getting students who maybe need a little brush up on their college readiness skills. And so it's my job to kind of get them ready for the next challenges as they go along.
Whatever that may be.
Exactly.
And it's critical. A lot of people forget about the fact that when you go to Gateway, yes, you're going to learn some great technical skills and be linked to a career and pursue your passion, but along with that becomes all those general education expectations, whether it's reading or public speaking and writing skills. And so all of our students go through those programs, and that's actually where we've concentrated a lot on our student success programs. And we've talked a little bit on the program about our new academic learning centers and all of those support services that are necessary for a student to be successful in any occupation.
Very good. We welcome you. How long have you been at Gateway?
8 years.
8 years. Very good. And finally, Sonia Cooks. I'm guessing you teach on the Kenosha campus.
I do. I'm a registered nurse, so I've been at Gateway for 10 years now. I was very fortunate to actually receive my first degree at Gateway in 1997, so I'm very happy to be able to come back and teach at the place that pretty much started my career off.
Oh, so you're nice. Circled back to your alma mater, in a sense.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. Yeah. I know there's about 30% of the employees at Gateway have had some curriculum and coursework,
absolutely.
And so...
So it's always nice to kind of refer back to when we were at Gateway.
It's changed a little, hasn't it?
It's changed quite a bit, yes.
Before the holidays, we had the nurse pinning ceremony, which is always an emotional and inspirational time, and it's just great to hear the stories. And many of the stories about our nursing students are that they have a family career path, so
absolutely.
That someone in their family was in the medical field or possibly a nurse, and so now they get to see their son or daughter graduate in the same program. That's got to be pretty rewarding.
Yes, it is special.
Fantastic. So, John, the work that you do now in the fire program, do you tell us about the kind of real-life experience that is sort of behind your instruction and what kind of difference that makes?
Well, it seems odd to say this, but it's been almost 40 years since, you know, I graduated from high school and kind of walked on to my local fire department and really was bitten by the bug. And over those years, serving in seven different communities with different types of fire departments and forging the relationships with the members of the fire service, I think really what's evolved is an opportunity to bring more reality to the classroom and to the training ground, so that it's not just theory that's driving our students, but it's the reality and the duty, the responsibility, the relationship that they need to have with the people they're caring for and serving. We kind of look at things just a little bit differently. It seems odd to say it, but the student isn't necessarily the primary stakeholder we're looking at. We're looking at the community that is going to receive the service from our student and the department that's going to hire them. And we want to make sure that our students are ready to fit into that organization and into that community so they can serve to their fullest.
Particularly when they're serving in a sense that is a matter of life and death.
It's not like TV. Everything doesn't always have a happy ending. And I think Sonia can attest to that. people expect when they call 911 that you're going to get it 100% right 100% of the time. And that's an awesome level of responsibility when you take a look at the spectrum of types of emergencies that our people have to respond to. Whether they're personally having a good day or a bad day, they have to respond to somebody's ultimate worst day and make it right, or as best they can. With as much empathy and professionalism as possible.
Right.
And I think like any other profession, it certainly changes over time. I mean, there's so many new protocols and so many new processes that are being used, and so you have to keep all of your adjunct instructors up to date and making sure that you're delivering the right set of skills, because ultimately many of these programs have a state qualification that goes along with it,
Absolutely. And the reality is that we're no longer siloed, where when I started in the fire service, you pretty much served your community and you may or may not do too much with your neighbors. Now, almost everybody is helping almost everybody else. I think the Patrick Cudahy fire in Cudahy in 2008 really showed that, yeah, we do have a responsibility to help each other in times of emergencies. And the Echo Lake food fire a few years ago in Burlington showed us, you know, for years we preach you need to be ready to help each other. You need to work on interoperability. You need to work on all those things that make things seamless in times of emergencies. And a lot of people said, we never have to do that. Well, the reality is we have to do
that.
Absolutely.
And what kind of difference has it made for you as an instructor in this field to have the kind of real-life experience that you yourself have as a firefighter? I mean, is that a significant factor in how you are able to teach?
Absolutely. Where the rubber meets the road, and over the years, and knowing all the different firefighters and staying in contact with firefighters and watching the students that we've had in the past have the successes in their careers and maintain that level of contact and bring some of them back as adjuncts and then have them impact the students that we're dealing with today, that makes all the difference in the world. To have people with real-life responsibility and experience sharing that, what they know and what they love and what they're passionate about with other people, and really extending that level of encouragement and excitement and that bug, if you will, again, to the next generation.
Excellent. Heidi Jenkins, tell us how you came to be part of the field that you are in. Did anything in particular inspire you to go into this particular field to do this kind of teaching, and what about it do you find especially inspiring?
Well, I was one of those people. I went to vocational high school, never thought I'd ever go to college, learned how to take shorthand, that dates me a little bit, type on electric typewriter, those kind of things, and ended up deciding that I did need college, and I ended up going to a two-year community college. This was up in Alaska, and I had a first semester oral interpersonal teacher, instructor, who was starting the first speech and debate team. And she kind of corralled me, and I never thought in my whole entire world. I looked at it as a way, you had to travel outside of Alaska, so it was a way to travel. That's the way I looked at it. But it turned out to be an entirely life-changing experience for me. I, you know, went to school thinking I would be in business or something, but I eventually decided, because that instructor had so much belief in me and challenged me in so many ways, that I really liked the impact she had on me. And so it really looked at me and said, you need to go into teaching. And so I love the community college atmosphere. And then when I came, I was taught for 12 years at St. Catherine's High School in Racine, but I so like working with adults. I love the tech college. And I would encourage my students to go to Gateway because you learn so much practical knowledge. You know, a lot of students come at 18 and aren't sure where to go. But you come here for 2 years and you learn a skill and you can walk out of here making a good living. And then I go to graduation here at Gateway. And that's what keeps me inspired, because you just sit there and everyone is so happy and the families are so excited and there's so much possibility at that moment. And that's one of the things, even though I may not have had that student for 2 years because they were with me the first semester. I am the first semester. Like I said, I get a lot of students that first semester and it's my job to keep them coming back and make them feel like they can succeed just like my instructor did as well. So.
Gosh, I wish our audience could see my smile right now, because I'm thinking, listening to your story, Heidi, I'm thinking, like, I wish we could share that with that instructor that inspired you to become an instructor, because today is all about faculty excellence, and it's about the NISOD National Award that you received. And think about all the students that you're now impacting. I can just see the kind of the pay it forward effect, mm-hmm. where you had an outstanding instructor that encouraged you to go in to help others, and now you're a teacher and you're being recognized, and other generations of folks will come through your programs will ultimately find that sense of confidence in themselves and go out and do great things in our community as well. So congratulations.
Thank you. Well, actually, I did send her an email. I was sitting there thinking about her yesterday, and she and I became friends.
Did she ask what the temperature was here?
No, she did not. She's in Baltimore.
Oh, okay.
But I did. I haven't heard back from her, but I sent her an email saying I was thinking about her because of this.
Oh, so, that's terrific.
Yeah, so I let her know.
Well, hopefully she'll be listening in. That'll be great.
That's great. That, very, very good. Finally, Sonia Cooks, and of course, like John Doms, you're involved in a field that really involves life and death and making a difference in people's lives on that kind of level, that mm-hmm. it must really be exciting, and also you must have a really awesome sense of responsibility when you're part of a field like that.
Absolutely. Of course, it's my personal opinion that nursing is the most rewarding profession out there. Not only do we help, play a role in saving lives at the most critical elements in an individual's life, but I think more importantly what people need to realize about nurses is we work so hard on the front end to help advocate for, healthy lifestyles, disease prevention, things like that, because we don't want to see you in that critical element. So we work really hard to do that, and it is very rewarding, especially kind of like Heidi said, even just seeing your patients when they're admitted and then their progress and, positive outcomes and seeing them be able to be discharged and, go back to their lives. That's very rewarding.
Yeah, and it's one of the most challenging professions to prepare for. I know our nursing students, a lot of people think Gateway's a two-year college, and in many cases it is, but for nursing it's usually four and five and maybe even 6 years to get through, because you have clinicals and you've got a lot of practical experience that
Absolutely.
You have to go through. And one of the things that the student graduates of this last semester are setting up for right now would be their state exams. Mm-hmm. And something that is often kind of misunderstood, that a student completing a two-year degree program, an associate degree, it has to take the same state exam as a student completing a four-year nursing degree.
Wow.
So if you went to a neighboring university and completed a four-year nursing degree, you sit in the same exam room as the student that graduated from Gateway, and you end up taking the same test, and then when you pass, which we have a very high placement rate, so you can maybe comment on that, Sonia, but you're considered a registered nurse. So that's what registered nurse means, that you pass that state exam.
Absolutely. Mm. Yes, they do have to take a national licensure exam, and it's very rigorous, and we try to model our program so that our students can be successful when taking that exam. So all the hard work and all the crying tears and all that stuff, it's in preparation for that national exam, because we want them to be successful,
of course, for a lot of reasons. Very good. John Doms, you're in a field where we often think about sort of the tricks of the trade and the nuances of firefighting, often being not only taught in a classroom, but often passed down mentor to mentee. And I'm sure that the students, for instance, in your program right now see you in that role. Was there somebody in particular for you that was a mentor for you at the start as you were first becoming a firefighter? Or in a sense, were you not so blessed? And did you have to sort of make your way largely on your own in kind of figuring out what it meant to be a firefighter?
Well, that's an interesting perspective, because for the first few years, back in those days, I don't think there was much of a mentoring process. In fact, sometimes it was more dysfunctional than people would rather hear about.
Mm-hmm.
A number of mentors did emerge over the years. One long-distance mentor who I still maintain a close relationship with and who we are using the blue card system, retired Fire Chief Alan Brunicini from Phoenix, Arizona, but more locally, Chief Bob Stebbin from the South Shore Fire Department has been a mentor for 30 years and an extremely influential person in my career, and has given me plenty of opportunities to pass on to other people. I served 11 years with the Elmbrook Rotary, and I had a number of private sector mentors in that Rotary Club. And my current dean, Terry Simmons, has been a wonderful mentor, too. So I've been very, very blessed with the opportunity to work with so many really high-quality people.
I think that sort of exemplifies the whole idea of the Teacher Excellence Award, too, is that teachers serve as mentors to students that come through. So you never know who's watching.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, they're paying attention to all of the different attributes and, of course, the skills that we have. But more importantly, the interpersonal relationship developments that are so critical in any profession. But when you talk about professions like firefighting and nursing and police officers and so on, it's really about establishing a relationship and a rapport with your community. And so you become the ambassador or the mentor for the whole community. So it's a lot of expectation and responsibility to do all of that. But who didn't want to be a firefighter when they were little, right? So everyone looks up to it. And maybe, John, you can just talk a little bit about what it's like when young people come through on a tour or someone new is just thinking about a career, and what are the types of questions you might ask them? Why are they interested? And then how can you leverage that back into, you know, the profession of firefighting?
Well, it's a conversation that we often have with our students is – and, you know, the way our students at Gateway are marketed, you know, it says service first on the backs of their shirts. So you can tell a fire student, you know, at a long distance if they're not wearing an overcoat. We tell them, you're always on stage. And if you do something wrong, the headline on the newspaper isn't going to be Joe Blow from nowhere does something. It's going to be firefighter or fire student. So you need to be cognizant of your responsibility in the community. And then we ask them, you know, how many of you ever, went through a fire station on a tour as a child? And so many of them raise their hands. And you just remember, when you're on a fire department and someone comes up, even if it's an inconvenient time for you, to take the time and treat them special. I'll guarantee you that they'll leave either becoming a future firefighter working alongside you or working in another community, or they're going to become a taxpayer and going to pay your salary, or they're going to become an elected official and really affect what you do or don't do. So everything in life is relationships, and you need to really, really protect that investment that you have with the people who you are in contact with.
And it sounds like that's something that everybody maybe better understands today, and particularly in terms of the way you're trying to educate future firefighters. You're really trying to stir that into the mix right from the start.
Absolutely.
That understanding. Very good. Sonia Cooks, we touched on the fact actually earlier that the way in which firefighters get instructed over the years, that's changed a bit, mm-hmm. and technology has mm-hmm. really altered the landscape of how we teach firefighters and the tools with which they do what they do. Mm-hmm. Certainly healthcare has seen more than its share of dramatic changes over the last few years, particularly when it comes to technology. What kind of challenge is it for you and your fellow teachers to instruct future nurses in terms of being ready for all of those kind of changes? What kind of challenge does that represent?
You're right. Change, that's pretty much an understatement in healthcare. We teach our students that nursing, they're entering a profession that will be constantly changing. It's changing from the way healthcare is delivered, from the acuity levels, the medications that we see, the length of hospitalizations, the list goes on and on. So it's constantly changing. What we do is we follow evidence-based practices and we follow healthcare trends, and we always adjust our curriculum to meet the needs of those things. So we pretty much tell our students the minute they enter first semester through fourth, get ready because it's going to change. The minute you get comfortable with something, we're going to find out that didn't work. We need to do this better because research has shown us that there's better outcomes. We can care for our patients more effectively if we do these things. So we just say, you know, get ready. It's going to change. Don't get too complacent. Nursing is lifelong education. It's always changing. You're always going to learn, and you're always going to change with the times. So that's what
and the
we
consumer
promote.
Market has changed so much.
Absolutely.
I see TV commercials now for H&R Block comparing the Health Care Act with your taxes, and
wow.
it's an amazing shift in the mindset. People are much more aware of their health needs.
Absolutely.
As well as all of the services that are potentially available.
They come in very educated.
Yeah. How do you respond to some of the things that happen through the media, like, you know, the Ebola, which
mm-hmm.
is huge,
mm-hmm.
and now it's flu season, of course, right now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure that those things resonate into conversations with your students.
Absolutely, and kind of like John said, disaster preparedness, things that we thought years ago, you know, it was distance, we didn't have to worry about. We teach that. We have to stress that to our students. You know, there may be a time where you're taking care of numerous amounts of people when you have outbreaks like or the threat of outbreaks like Ebola and influenza and things like that. So we teach our students to be ready for that. That is part of the curriculum. That's part of the education that, you know, years ago we weren't talking about. Now we have to definitely stress that it's happening. Hmm. So what are we going to do to meet those needs? Hospitals are always training their employees, so we make sure that our students are made aware of the changes and things like that, because they're going to, you know, they do clinicals, they enter those facilities as well, so they need to be on board with what's going on at the hospital setting. Yeah.
I know when I speak with our nursing students, I've always remind myself before I go into the class or to the group of students I'm talking with about that the title nursing is really just the cover of the book, because there are so many different elements and aspects and specializations of nursing. So they'll tell me all about the area in which they want to focus in and actually develop expertise in. And most people think, oh, you know, I think I know what a nurse does, but boy, their specialization is so critical today, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It used to be a nurse is a nurse is a nurse. It's not really true, but yes, that's the beauty of the profession, because you definitely can venture off into different aspects of healthcare.
For those of you just joining us on today's morning show, it's the monthly visit of Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, and we are so happy that with us today are three excellent Gateway instructors from three different campuses, three different disciplines. They have each won the President's Excellence Award, and for very good reason, as we can already tell from talking to each of them. Heidi Jenkins, unlike the other two guests, John and Sonia, you are part of a component of the college in which you're not focusing on the task of training nurses or the task of training firefighters. You are enhancing the educational experience of students who come from all kinds of different academic disciplines here at Gateway. I should think one of the really interesting challenges for you as a teacher of what you teach, the writing skills and so on, is that you have these students coming at you from all these different directions, in a sense. What kind of difference does that make in the way that you teach, for instance, the skill of writing? And to what extent is it possible to cater to the particular interest or focus of each of your students?
Well, that's what makes my job interesting.
Right.
I always learn a lot about all the different programs we have here at Gateway, because I do get quite a mix. And so what I do is, luckily I worked in business for 20 years before I became a teacher. So I worked in different fields. And so I draw on all that experience, as well as just gaining knowledge of, and in the world, we all know what different people, instructors do or different programs do. So I use that in my classroom. One of the things I have them do is they have to research a current trend in whatever field they're going into, and then come back and write a response to that. You know, where do you see yourself? I have them, so I try to incorporate a lot of those different programs within my classroom. And if they're writing, I'm talking about what kind of writing is done in your field. I have them do research on that, because I want them to see that they do have to write, and it has to be organized, and it has to make sense, and the grammar does count. Those kinds of things are important. So that's one of the things I like about my job, is I do get to incorporate all those different fields within what I teach. It's not trying just to teach writing out of context. I want them to bring in what they're learning from their other classes and things like that.
How important is that, writing in context? I mean, you think about what we really try to help all students from middle school through high school, and try to develop that application, because it helps to inspire a passion, right? And so if you can develop that passion, and that's why Heidi is here, because she's an excellent teacher to help keep students motivated in doing something that maybe they don't want to do that day, and that's write a report or something. But so my follow-up question is not for Heidi at all, because I admire what she's doing, but it's for John and Sonia. How important is writing in your profession?
I was just going to say thanks, Heidi. We appreciate what you do, because, yes, and that's another thing. You know, when students enter nursing, it's, you know, there's hands-on application, technical, but there's a lot of writing. And as they move on into their degrees, hopefully, they'll see how important writing is. A lot of research involved in nursing. So, yeah, we have our students, you know, do a lot of research projects, which require, you know, APA format, writing papers, things like that. So, yes, lots of writing.
How about firefighters?
Oh, we just love to write reports.
And do they have to be organized?
Oh, you have to be. And, you know, and because most fire is also EMS, you know, you have to document what you did and why you did it and so on and so forth. And a lot of times the fruits of that labor may not be relevant until several years down the road when someone contests something that may have been done. And so the documentation that you did or didn't do becomes very, very important. So it goes back again to the relationships. Yes, you have to have the ability to properly document, but you also have to maintain your credibility. As Gordon Graham, who's a fantastic instructor, risk manager, talks about, if you can't attack the facts, you attack the writer of the facts. And if you don't have the credibility as a fire and EMS professional, I dare say probably a nursing professional also, you leave yourself open to undue scrutiny and attack. So you have to do your job, and you have to do your job right, and you have to document it properly.
So what you're teaching then, Heidi Jenkins, matters in that a great deal. I was thinking, too, how interesting it would be to be a fly on the wall of your classes, because just in terms of the students sitting in the class, it's probably fairly distinct from, for instance, the typical nursing class, the typical firefighting class, where you have a bunch of firefighters in that room or a bunch of nursing students. But I assume that the classes you teach are not like that. You don't have a room full of students from a particular field who are there to learn writing, but they're streaming at you from all different disciplines of the college.
Oh, definitely, and all age groups. I can have 18 to 60 in a classroom, and it really makes for interesting conversation. The older ones get my jokes. That's the best part. When I say I took shorthand, they're like, oh, I remember that.
Yeah, all right, along so, with the butter churn.
Yeah, yes. Kind of, sort of.
Yeah, all right. Very good. John Doms, when somebody is thinking about the possibility maybe of being a firefighter, what are the kinds of things they should think about, aside from, boy, that looks like it would be exciting? I mean, what are the most essential qualities or characteristics that that are really required for someone to be a successful firefighter?
I think there are a couple of keys. One, you have to be a people person. We're in the people business. You have to be able to get along with people within the firehouse. You have to be able to get along with people within the community, the people that you respond to, who may be much different than you are. You have to be a team player. There isn't much that we do solo. Most of it's done as a team, as a company. It's one of those things where you kind of have to put aside maybe some of the stuff you see on TV and realize that most of your career is going to be spent preparing for emergencies and working through different training evolutions on a regular and continual basis, because you just don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, John, I'm always asked as well, so what are the career opportunities like right now? Are people looking for firefighters and EMS? I know I drove past Kansasville and I saw the sign, we're looking to hire EMS specialists. But
The non-career departments are always looking for people. With so many different things going on in life, the national average for a non-career firefighter EMT is 3 to 5 years.
When you say non-career, that would be for your volunteers, local community volunteer fire
department. Local community, if they don't have a career department, a full-time department, 3 to 5 years. Now, there are people that stick around for 10, 20, 30, or even longer, but the national average is 3 to 5 years. And so those smaller departments are always looking for people. But the career departments, they have turnover too. And in the state of Wisconsin, things are rather stable right now, where the communities aren't expanding fire departments as rapidly as maybe some other parts of the country. So there are always different parts of the country where they're continually hiring firefighters every year because their communities are expanding. In Wisconsin, our communities are fairly stable right now, but there is a relatively high rate of turnover. Some people do leave the profession, but there are a number of retirements. And we're still in that phase right now where there's still plenty of opportunity in the career field.
Good. Sonia, I wonder if you would entertain the same question. When somebody is thinking about going into nursing, what are the qualities that are really essential to being a successful nurse, particularly in this modern world in which we live?
Right. And I agree with what John said. I guess I would say follow your passion. Don't be afraid. Sometimes I talk to a lot of people, students who are interested in nursing but have a fear of the math, have a fear of the reading, things like that. I had a fear of chemistry, and I did perfectly fine. So just, you know, follow your passion. And, yes, research the career of nursing. Don't go by what you see on TV, okay? Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, if you have a family member or somebody that was hospitalized, maybe that nurse probably role modeled some behaviors that you appreciated and you could identify with. So learn about the profession a little bit more and then start, you know, enrolling in courses that will ultimately get you prepared. And like Heidi said, you need to start with your basic reading, math, things like that. And when you enter nursing courses, you'll be much more prepared. Science is the big thing. So start, I tell the, you know, high school students, make sure you have a solid science background. So, you know, when your teacher tells you to read that science book or do that math algebra, there's a reason. Because you're going to see it later in nursing. It does not go away.
Mm. And there's a career path where you can get started, and that gives you a chance to test different health career occupations.
Yes.
I know that Gateway does a lot with our local high schools in what's called a CNA, a Certified Nursing Assistant
yes.
program. But there's also medical terminology, and there's a wide variety of different areas of interest that students can pursue.
Yes, and that's what we usually see with students, that they will be certified nursing assistants, and from that they gain more exposure to healthcare, and then ultimately will enroll in a nursing course.
Very good. Mm-hmm. John, you were talking about the fact that firefighting is very much a team undertaking, and I'm just curious about that notion of teamwork. What are some tangible ways in which that concept is taught to your students? I mean, and is it a particular kind of teamwork that's involved in this kind of work?
Well, it's one of those kind of acute issues that we deal with. We have one segment of our student population that didn't play high school sports, who really came right out of high school into our program and may not have even worked a part-time job. So there's a learning curve that's definitely there. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have a lot of vets who are entering the program who've been immersed in teamwork activities for, you know, 2, 4, 6 years with a different branch of the military. And so we try to merge that in the sense of what you're going into is a team career field. And so it's kind of crawl, walk, run, and you start by building the relationships with the students and helping them understand that I can't go out, certainly can't do it anymore, raise a 35-foot ladder by myself.
Mm.
You know, those types of things. We can't advance a hose line into a burning building by yourself. You need the other people. And you can't be the person that outperforms the other person. You have to work together. And you use your physical strength, your stamina, what's between your ears to problem solve, because you are the community problem solver. Mm-hmm. And not everything's the same as it was yesterday. And so you have to be flexible in your thinking and flexible in your ability to work with different people, because the person I worked with today may not be the person I work with next shift. Mm-hmm. So you have to be a team player.
Yeah, I think John described something there too, and that's typically how Gateway Technical College works. We're a lab-based college, so we have lots of activities in which students apply their professional skills. And so, you know, we actually put out fires, and we have ladders and trucks that students get to climb around and drive and so on. And so the type of training that we provide is really designed around helping students be able to practice and then to demonstrate how well they work together as a team, how well they solve that problem, and how well they can apply the technology to perform in that particular profession.
Absolutely.
Very important. Heidi Jenkins, it occurs to me that we've talked about the changes in technology for both John's field and Sonia's field, and it's a gross we're overlooking something very important if we don't acknowledge that technology has changed very much in the field that you teach as well. What are the most significant ways?
Well, cell phones.
Yeah, right.
Unfortunately, it's become almost competition. Our world has become so fast-paced. If you watch a TV commercial these days, especially aimed at younger people, you're going to see an image change about every 3 seconds. And I can be entertaining in the classroom, but just not quite that much. And that can be frustrating sometimes. Technology has also enhanced my profession very nicely, because I have a lot more resources at my fingertips. If I'm looking for a lesson, I'm kind of bored with the way I teach it, that's out there for me to look at. You know, people are so generous with posting lessons and ideas. So there's such a wealth of information at our fingertips. But as far as in the classroom, I think our students, the attention span, not even of younger people, but of older people as well, that cell phone has become such glued to their fingers and sitting in class, it's hard sometimes. I mean, I kind of keep things moving, but it's hard for sometimes for students to get away from their life. And I try to encourage them, be present in the classroom. This is for you. This is your time. Don't worry about what's happening. It's going to be there in an hour and a half when you get out of class. But that is a real struggle, and I'm sure it is for the other two instructors here as well. Although you guys have the I always say you guys have kind of a little bit on me, because if I don't do my job, no one gets hurt. But you guys, on the other hand, you know, it's a little more serious.
Right.
So that's kind of how I see technology, and just trying to get students to recognize it has a place, but it's not in the classroom necessarily all
right.
the time.
And I'm curious, too, when people sit down, for instance, to write a paper, what difference do you think it makes that they're sitting in front of a computer, a word processor, versus once upon a time a typewriter with correcting ribbon and all
yes,
that?
Yes, I remember the eraser.
Yeah, I mean, how much has that altered the process of writing, do you think?
Well, we do have an issue with spelling and grammar because they're so used to texting. And, you know, you find the U in the letter U instead of Y-O-U. But they're also, again, they also have a lot of resources at their fingertips. So we have to be more careful about plagiarism, be more serious about plagiarism, because that information is so easily accessible. So that's kind of a challenge. And we do have students who come into a writing class, and our writing classes are in computer labs, that aren't comfortable with computers, young and old. I'm always amazed that I do get some students who just, oh, I've really never used a computer much, and they're going to try and... And it's my job to help train them as well on how to use a computer. So,
well, you think about the field of writing. So if that's what you want to go into and you want to be a journalist or something, and think about all the different careers that have evolved in the last 10 years. Social media is a good example. Mm-hmm. So there are people that specialize now in the language of social media and fitting things within 21 characters, right? And so we have actually on campus here, we have staff members that focus on the social media aspect of our messaging. And it's really, like Heidi said, what a challenge to try to help people understand the complexity of writing, and then how does that fit in within your profession? So John and Sonia talked about technical writing. That's a different form of writing, and I'm sure if you went to the human services or if we had guests here, they talk about more of a report writing type of strategy so they can document conversations, and it's all a little different. And Heidi has to try to pull that all together into content, into a scope of sequence of
Well, and it's reading, too, because, you know, it's hard for a book, words on a page, to compete with, you know, video or something else.
The world blowing up.
Exactly.
Whatever.
And so that attention span, again, students have trouble focusing, and they're not comfortable with it because I think in some ways have forgotten how to make those words into images.
Yeah.
You know, we as older students, we knew that when I read, I see pictures. They don't have to anymore because it's up on the screen, it's up on their video, you know, and that makes a difference. And so trying to convince them that, yes, you still have to read in your job.
Yeah. So we're fortunate, Greg, that you and I do radio.
That's right.
We just have to talk.
That's what this is all about.
I don't know about the listening skills, too.
Right, it's true. Well, we have just a few moments to give each of you a chance to just say a very quick word in just a few seconds, I'm afraid, about what it means to have been given this Excellence in Teaching Award. What do you want to say in terms of what this means and represents for you? Anybody? Sonia?
I just want to say I'm very appreciative of this award. Want to let my colleagues know that I may have received the Excellence Award, but I received it because I'm fortunate to work with them. They allow me to be creative and think outside the box. And like I said, although I've received the award, it's because of their willingness to let me be the way that I am. So thank you.
Nicely put. Anybody else?
Well, I was just, it's like the Academy Award speech. I was really honored just to be nominated. I really was, because it's nice to know that the work you put in does get recognized. I know there
and
are a lot of...
Particularly by your peers.
Yeah, exactly. And I know there are a lot of other instructors who are just as excellent, I guess. So it was just an honor.
Very good.
I think it's very humbling because I take a look at the past recipients and knowing many of them now, can really truly appreciate the high quality of person they are and instructor that they are, and to be considered among them is really quite humbling. But I feel very, very blessed to have been given the opportunity to work here and to extend my career and to truly make a difference, and I do appreciate that. Thank you, Brian.
Mm-hmm. Well, I couldn't be more proud. I think we learned today on our program just the outstanding instructors that we have here at Gateway Technical College, and certainly the three that we've had on our program today are representative of the hundreds of people that work here at Gateway. And what a thrill for us to be able to share with our community the technical expertise, but equally important, the passion and the commitment that our faculty have to ensuring that all the students that have a Gateway experience are given opportunities to be successful, hopefully become very well educated, and make a difference in our community as a result. So congratulations to all three of you, and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And we're glad that you could be here on the morning show. John Doms, Heidi Jenkins, Sonia Cook's very best wishes to you in your future teaching here at Gateway. And President Brian Albrecht, always great to have you here as
well. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Gregory Berg. And we are approaching 9 o'clock here.